What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to FUBAR Radio. This is Clara Hermit and you are listening to What the Health. I'm here for Gabby Allen today. And this, of course, is your go-to show for all things health and fitness. And you might be wondering, who am I? What am I doing here? Well, you'll be pleased to know I've got my gym kit on. I'm going to tell you all about my favourite exercise on the show today. Funnily enough, I'm a qualified PT. It's not what I do for work anymore. I'm actually a radio presenter and a coach as well. So a self-love and confidence coach. And I know that on this show, it's not just about physical fitness. It's also about our mental well-being and how physical fitness impacts our mental well-being. And I think that that is so, so important. So we'll talk more about that on the show today. Now, coming up, I'm going to be speaking to Marnie Swindles, who's the owner of the Bronx Gym, which is a boxing gym. She's the winner of The Apprentice. We're also going to be speaking to Jess Evans. She's the founder of BODA, which stands for Bored of Dating Apps, aren't we all? We'll be speaking to her all about the events that she puts on and what she has to say about the future of dating, which I'd like to know because I am single and always looking to mingle. So hopefully Jess is going to have some good advice for us. And I'm going to be answering some of your fitness questions as well. But before we get into all of that, I would like to welcome our first guest to this morning's show. Her name is Dr. Zeynep Lefter, and she is a consultant dermatologist. And she joins us now to debunk some of the myths around sun safety. Good morning, Dr. Zeynep. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, and I'm glad you're here. I have to say, this summer, you know, there might be a lot of people, because the weather is the way it is, thinking, I don't need sun cream. There's no sun. It's been raining all the time. And so it's really great to talk to you because I think, obviously, sun protection does need to be taken seriously, doesn't it? And when the weather is like this, should we still be wearing sunscreen?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, over the years, surveys have shown.
Oh, I think we might have lost Dr. Zeynep, but it's okay. Don't
estimated
worry. I think, let's see if we can get her.
It's only about 60% before they're going out with less than 40%. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're back now.
Sorry. I was just saying that over the years, surveys have shown that sun protection has improved. However, there's still a lot more that we can do. Currently, it's estimated only 60% of adults apply sunscreen before going out, with less than 40% reapplying during the day. And when we've looked at kind of at sun protection habits, we've seen a notable difference between younger and older adults, as well as a difference between the genders. Like research have indicated that adolescents, for example, are less consistent with using sun protection compared to older adults. They tend to be more concerned about tanning, less aware of the associated risks. Women also in general tend to be more proactive about sun protection than men. They tend to use sunscreen more regularly and are more likely to use higher SPF products. So I still think that there is a lot that we can do to try and reduce our risk of both premature aging, but also reduce our risk of skin cancers.
Yeah, even hearing you talk about that makes me think back to when I was, you know, a kind of teenager in my late teens and early 20s, and I abused sunbed so much, and I was obsessed with, you know, having a tan, and I thought that was really, really important. And, you know, obviously I knew about sun cream and putting that on so that I didn't get burnt, but I really don't think at that age I was able to grasp, you know, the dangers and the damage that I was doing to my skin by kind of taking those risks. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you see around sun protection?
So I'd say that three top misconceptions I see in clinic are, number one, only sunburn indicates damage to the skin. And unfortunately, that's not true, because we know that UV radiation causes significant damage at the cellular level, and that doesn't necessarily cause visible skin signs. And over time, that does lead to premature aging and increased risk of skin cancers with both basal cell carcinomas, squamous cell carcinomas, as well as the dangerous melanomas, which are the cancerous moles. Another misconception is sunscreen alone is enough to provide protection. And although it's essential, its sole reliance often leads to inadequate protection. And so like a broader sun protection behavior should include wearing protective clothing, seeking shade during peak hours, and when the sun is at highest risk of causing sunburn. And finally, sunscreen is needed only on sunny days. And unfortunately, UV radiation, particularly UVA, penetrates clouds. And so like today, sun protection is essential.
Yeah, and you step outside and you think, but there is no sun, Dr. Zainab. Why do I need sun protection when there isn't even any sun? But like you're saying, even if we can't see it, you know, the part that's dangerous for us is there, and we should be kind of, you know, making sure that we are wearing sunscreen. It's something that I always put, you know, on my face, and I put a factor 50 on my face, and I always think factor 50 is so much better than factor 30 and etc. Is there a huge difference between them? And, you know, I know that we're taught about this, and maybe I sound a bit silly for this, but how do they actually work? What are the SPFs actually doing?
So the idea with sunscreen is that it allows you more time to be outside without getting burnt.
Right.
And going back to the SPF 30 and 50, there's not actually a huge difference from a UVB protection. So the sun rays are generally divided into UVA and UVB. The UVA is a long wavelength that penetrates clouds and glass. That is predominantly causing the premature aging, the pigmentation, the redness that we get as we get older. The UVA is a shorter wavelength that causes the risk of skin cancers. So the SPF number indicates protection against UVB, so the rays that cause skin cancer. And usually the graph, if you look at the SPF graph, it actually starts to plateau after SPF of 30. And the difference between SPF 30 and 50 is only 1% protection.
Wow.
Having said that, we don't apply enough of what it says on the bottle to get the protection. And so most people will apply half of the protection on what's on the bottle. So if you apply an SPF of 30, then realistically you're getting an SPF of 15 to 20% protection. Whereas if you apply an SPF of 50, you're getting about 25 to 30% protection, which gives you the 98% protection against UVB. So if you're going to be really diligent with using your SPF 30 and applying it regularly, you will get adequate protection. But I do say higher the better.
I'm kind of pulling a bit of a face now because I wear makeup. And so I put on the cream underneath my makeup. And obviously, a day like today, I wouldn't then reapply anything throughout the day because I've got makeup on. So it's just kind of, I put that on as a base. Does that mean that after a few hours, essentially, it's not working anymore and there is no longer any sun protection?
Exactly. And especially if you are going to be outside in direct sunlight or you're sweating, you should be reapplying it. You know, generally we say reapply every 2 hours and immediately after sweating or swimming to make sure that you get the adequate protection.
I feel like I need a slap on the wrist now because there's me thinking it's fine. I put factor 50 on in the morning. It's all right. And what about base tans? Because there are these kind of, you know, myths when it comes to tanning that if we do these certain things, it's all right. We're going to be protected. It's fine. I've got it. And I certainly am someone who will say about having a base tan because I feel like I'm quite pale. And if I have a base tan and then I'm out in the sun with sun protection, it tends to mean that I tan rather than burn. But is there any truth in that, or have I just made that up in my head, basically?
I think there's very little truth.
Okay,
to that.
It's all right. You can tell me. Tell me the truth. It's fine.
I mean, from a dermatology perspective, base tans are not recommended. And the reason for it is, firstly, a base tan provides very little protection against UV radiation. So it's roughly equivalent to an SPF of 3 or less, which is nothing. And so you're still at high risk of burning. Secondly, tanning is the skin's response to DNA damage caused by UV radiation. So essentially, when your skin tans, it's a clear indication that damage has occurred. And importantly, tanning beds emit harmful UV radiation and are associated with higher risk of skin cancers. And it's estimated that one sunbed session alone increases the risk of melanoma by 20%. So for that reason, base tans are not recommended.
Yeah, I'm sitting here covering my face now because I, you know, I'm like, Clara, you have gone way too far. Because like I said, sunbed's not something that I do now, but for years was something that I was really kind of, like I said, obsessed with. And you just, I think especially when you're younger, you don't consider that. And even if you do, you feel invincible. So it's fine. It's not going to happen to me because I'm invincible. So, you know, we kind of make excuses and exceptions. And I remember the terrible things that I did, you know, like using sun tanning oils. Is that a thing? Because they used to heat up the surface of my skin so much I'd then get prickly heat. And I felt like I was cooking myself like a roast chicken, basically.
Thankfully, that is not as popular as it used to be. I mean, we were all there, including myself. Okay. You know, when you're younger, you know, skin cancer is not on the top of our mind. Having a nice brown glow that we were all after. But, you know, data has suggested that even if you are much older and you start practicing good sun protection, it reduces your risk of skin cancer. So it's never too late. It's all about that cumulative damage.
Yeah, okay. Are there sun products, like, for example, with me, where I'm wearing makeup that I could continue to spray on throughout the day? Is there things like that? If not, I think I might have found the thing that I'm going to invent, everybody, right here on the show.
So there are sprays, okay, which you can use. You can also obviously use lotions. There are sticks as well that you can apply. And, you know, it's not just sunscreen alone. There are other sun protection behaviours that you should incorporate, like, for example, wearing a wide-brim hat, wearing UPF clothing. So there are other ways also to incorporate.
Even if hats don't suit you, you should wear one because it's going to keep you safe.
Becoming more popular.
They are. No, do you know what? I love wearing hats, but the reason that, the thing that puts me off, and I have got better, especially when I'm on holiday now, wearing a hat, and I always cover my face when I sunbathe because I have pigmentation from the damage that I did in my younger years. I get pigmentation around the top of my lip, and for people who don't know what that is, it's where kind of an area of your skin is obviously sun damaged, and then in the sun it goes much darker. So I just have like a moustache, and then I have kind of big patches on my cheek, so I do always cover my face. But when it's hot and you've got a hat on, it then makes you hotter. So that's kind of my only, I mean, I sound like I'm just making excuses now. So apart from using sunscreen, wearing a hat, as you said, perhaps clothing as well, are there any other things that we can be doing to stay safe in the sun?
It does. And especially...
I thought there was a bit of delay.
And also, okay, on days when it's a little bit more windy, keeping that hat on is also a little bit more harder. But they do offer an extra added level of sun protection.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Look, it's been so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for being with us on the show today. And I'm going to heed your advice and take it very seriously and take much better care, I think, of my skin. It's kind of sometimes you need someone to tell you to have a little bit of a wake up call. So thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And as you heard Dr. Zainab say there, it doesn't matter the weather that we've been experiencing this summer. I am 41 years old, and I'm sure people say this every year, but I think this is the worst summer of my life. Not in terms of, you know, having fun and enjoyment, but the weather, what is going on? I don't know what to wear anymore. You have to leave the house with a suitcase that contains an umbrella, a raincoat, sunscreen, all kinds of things, a bikini, because you just don't know which way it's going to go. I found that very difficult. Now, this is the point of the show where I'm going to talk to you about my exercise of the week. And my current gym routine at the moment involves, you know, a lot of lifting weights. I enjoy lifting weights. I like being strong. It's one of my kind of favorite things. Cardio has taken a little bit of a backseat, a little bit. And I'm more into lifting. And my favorite exercise, which has been for years, I suppose, is hip thrusts. And the reason that I love hip thrusts is, number one, I get to sit down. And I feel like when I'm doing squats or deadlifts, you know, there's other things that I have to navigate in terms of my posture, and I'm standing, and it gets to the point of my workout where I do hip thrusts and I think, at least I get to sit down. The one thing I don't like about hip thrusts, and I know this is my favorite exercise, so maybe I'm not supposed to say this, is the fact that you have to, it's the weight, it's the loading up the bar and the unloading of the bar. It's the biggest waste of time in life. And it's also like a workout in and of itself. So, you know, maybe a bonus. But what I love about hip thrusts is, A, for me, it's an exercise where I can go really heavy with the weights as well. So it feels like a real sense of achievement, and that I'm really targeting my glutes, which, you know, is an area for me that, despite working on them for very many years, they don't grow. I would love to, you know, have one of those kind of bums that I could like show off and do the poses in the mirror. It doesn't. There's nothing there, really. I'm going to be honest with you, despite how heavy the hip thrusts get. But for me, it's a real sense of achievement. And that's something that I really enjoy about the gym. And it's how I feel when I've finished. And I always think that is my motivation for going to the gym. And when it comes to hip thrusts, they are are, of course, great for building your glute strength. And that is important for the stabilization of your core, your pelvis and all of your lower body. And I think especially as women and as we kind of get older, it's really important for us to lift weights for our bone density. And these are things that we have to think about. So if you haven't tried hip thrusts, or if you feel a bit self-conscious trying hip thrusts, or there's something that you kind of put off because of all the setup and all of those things, then today is the reminder to get thrusting, hip thrusting that is, and get in the gym and do what you can do. And I'm sure that you will absolutely love it. So very shortly indeed, we're going to be joined by Marnie Swindles, who is the owner of Bronx, which is a boxing gym, and she is also the winner of The Apprentice. I'm also going to be answering some of your questions, and we'll be speaking to Jess Evans, the founder of Bored of Dating Apps. We'll be talking to her all about what she thinks the future of dating is, and we'll do all of that after this.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Oh, well, it's
Fubar
actually...
Fubar Radio presents...
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me now, I have Claire Seal, who is a content creator and author.
You know, I think there's loads of shame when it comes to money and financial difficulty, but I honestly think that that shame is really a symptom of the judgment that exists in society. I don't think that people are feeling ashamed for the sake of it. I think they're feeling ashamed because you can't really sort of open your phone or open a newspaper without seeing these huge judgments piled on people who've made mistakes with money. And I think it's acceptable for people to slag you off about being bad with money in a way that it might not be for like other mistakes that you might make.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
Let's bring in Tobias Elwood, former defence minister.
Rishi Sunak has done well to pivot us back, taken us into far calmer political waters.
Has he taken you back into calmer political waters? I mean, you're on track, according to some of the polls, to the largest wipeout in years and, you know, may never return from it. I mean, how has he taken you back into calmer political waters?
We've just seen inflation go down to 2%. Confidence in business is returning.
But is that down to Rishi Sunak?
You've got to let me finish the question. You keep asking me a question and then throwing another question in.
I'm just curious to know, is inflation down to Rishi Sunak?
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I have the stunning Steph Williams with me now, founder of the We Glow app. I did Turf Games on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was horrible. It was horrible. But it was so fun. But it was like savage, right? Yeah. But I wasn't the best in the room and I hate that. And I was like, oh God, I haven't trained like well enough for this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I don't normally think I am. But then when I was there, I was like, this is so annoying because... Yeah. And then I was like, why do I actually need to be good at this though? Yeah. Like, can I not just do it for fun?
But also it's like when I've done like casts and stuff before and the blokes were like, lift that heavier weight. And I'm like, no, like I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to lift the heavier weight. Like I know what I'm capable of. I know what works for my body.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of, like, I know what makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you're working out to feel good, you're going to look good.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
You are listening to Fubar Radio. This is Clara Hermit here on the What the Health show, in for Gabby Allen. Welcome back. And it's time for our big topic right now. And this week, I'm going to be joined by Marnie Swindles, who's the owner of Bronx Boxing Gym and the winner of The Apprentice. And Marnie joins me on the line now. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me today.
That's no worries. I know you were going to be here in the studio and, you know, as is in London sometimes, we have problems with transport. But I'm sad you're not here. I was going to show you some of my my best boxing moves. So I bet you're gutted about that, aren't you?
Yeah, the trains were not playing ball today, but I'm sure we can make that happen anyway.
Honestly, I don't think I could ever fight anyone, Marnie, and I know that you have done that, and I think that such admiration, because I've never been in a fight in my life, and I don't know what would happen if I got hit. However, boxing training, I just really enjoy punching things that I'm supposed to punch, but it's so much fun, and the discipline of the training is so great, and we're going to talk more about the gym and, of course, your history and your... how you got into boxing, etc. But first, we've got some quick fire questions. So are you ready?
I'm always ready. I was born ready.
Yeah, that's right. That's the boxer in you. Okay, Marnie, three words to describe yourself. Go.
Stubborn, ambitious, dreamer.
Love it. Upper or lower body day?
Oh, upper. All day.
All day, every day. Workout in the morning or in the evening?
difficult one. Evening.
What's your go-to cheat meal?
Domino's pizza. Everything on it.
Right, that's it. I feel like that's what I need now. Your dream workout partner? Quick.
Someone encouraging.
Channing Tatum. I mean, yeah. Why not? Do you think Channing Tatum would be encouraging, or would you just be encouraged because he's there?
I mean, I don't think I'd get anything done.
And finally, what's your workout anthem?
Oh, anything 50 Cent. Anything G-Unit, 50 Cent, old school gangster. I need to feel like I am the hardest person in the room.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I honestly think when it comes to boxing, one of, you know, maybe this is just me and you can tell me to shut up, but I think one of the things that really adds to the theatrics and the theatre and the build-up is the track that people pick to walk out to the ring.
Absolutely. And do you know what? I think boxing is such a universal thing. Even if you don't care about fighting, everybody has some demons in them that they need to get out. Mm. And it's such an innate thing to do, to punch out. So that's why I think it is loved by so many people, even if they don't take it as far as fighting.
Yeah, yeah, I totally hear that. Can you tell us a little bit more about Bronx and why you wanted to set it up in the first place?
Yeah, so Bronx is a gym in Southeast London. It's a boxing gym. We've got a sauna, we've got a weight gym, we've got a studio. And my whole thing was about opening the doors to boxing, letting people see the magic that lies behind a boxing club door. Because people, on first perception, they're intimidated by it. They think there's a lot of ego and six packs and it's very masculine. And there's so much more for it to offer. There's such a community here. And just what it does for people's heads, never mind their bodies, what it does for people's heads, I just urge everybody to take that first step and walk through the door. And that was how I wanted us to set ourselves apart, is being somewhere that was so accessible, so welcoming. And I think we've done that.
Incredible. And it's so important. And I love to hear you talk about that, because I think, you know, exercise, when I was growing up and when I was younger, the whole focus was about appearance and, you know, vanity metrics. And as I've got older, it's like, no, I realize now this just makes me feel good. It helps my mental health. It supports every aspect of my life. And that's why, you know, I have the relationship that I have with exercise. And it sounds like obviously you're trying to encourage people to have that. And you mentioned there, obviously, that boxing is often perceived as very masculine, and it can seem really intimidating, especially for women. What would you say to anybody who might have thought, I'd love to give it a go, but I'm not, you know, this, or I'm not that, or and don't think they tick the boxes?
Yeah, and I have to say, I also think men probably suffer from as much intimidation as women in terms of stepping in the boxing club, because it is the idea of, unless I'm this alpha male with this six pack, will I belong there? And I see men have that same sort of hesitant first step through the door, thinking, you know, is this the place for me? And like I said, it's such an innate thing to do that anybody belongs in a pair of gloves. There is something that anyone can get from it. And just the sense of community. Boxing has changed my trajectory at every moment, through people I've met here, through relationships that have formed here. And I can't speak highly and advocate enough for what boxing will do. I mean, our slogan is Beyond Boxing, because I really wanted to move away from, as you said, those vanity metrics. Let people know that it's about what it does to your gut. It's about how it makes you feel. And I think that is the biggest message for people to take away.
I think you're doing an incredible job of being an advocate, because you're kind of like, but it's your passion, you know, it is so genuine and authentic that it's like, right, get my gloves on, I'm ready, I'll be there in a minute.
You really don't realise how much people need it in their lives. Until they walk through the door, I don't think even they themselves realise quite how much they need that escape and that place. Mm. So I hope, if nothing else, that this is a home for people who need it most. I don't consider us as a gym, you know. Our marketing isn't about six packs and how much weight you'll lose and how big your biceps will be. All of our pictures are about people smiling and laughing and groups, and that is the foundation for me of what it represents. It's about feelings, not fitness.
Yeah, and it seems like, almost as you mentioned, that you're trying to recreate the experience you had, and that boxing has, you know, kind of impacted your life and the trajectory of your life. And you've been boxing since you were 17. How did you first get into boxing?
Well, as you said, I'm trying to give people what it gave me. I first walked into a boxing club and I can't even really explain why. I just knew I was in a place. I was angry. I'd lost my dad many years before and I didn't really felt like I'd ever dealt with it. So walking into that boxing club for the first time, putting those gloves on, just letting it all go on the bags, it was like the clouds parted and there was just so much clarity. And I just fell in love with it and I haven't stopped ever since. I've just maneuvered through different capacities as a boxer, as a coach, now owning a gym. And now I feel like I've found what I'm supposed to be doing in the sport, which is facilitating that feeling with so many other people. This week alone, Claire, I've had three grown men come into my office and cry. And it's just, it's what it represents. It's they do their sessions and everything, but there's something in the air here that helps people get those demons out.
It sounds like a really, like you've created a safe space. And I don't think it should ever be underestimated, you know, how we do store emotions in different parts of our bodies, so that when we do, you know, some people will say, I did a yoga class, you know, I was doing this pose and then suddenly I just started crying. Or so there are, you know, different things that we do that have emotional releases. We do them physically and they impact us mentally. And it sounds like, you know, that's, you understand how intrinsically linked our physical and mental are. And that is your kind of focus.
I think the world demands so much of us. It demands us to be so high functioning and just keep pushing forward. And this year for me personally has, hand on heart, without shadow of a doubt, been the hardest chapter in my adult life. And I've had no choice but to just keep pounding the pavement, just keep pushing forward. And it will catch up with me one day. And I think that's true of so many people. And until these tiny defining moments, like your yoga moment or like that moment I had when I hit the bag, you don't even recognize, you don't acknowledge it to yourself how badly you need that physicality. And exercise is, honestly, it's the key. It's the key to freeing those feelings.
It is. I just feel like I need to have you on my shoulder all the time. And then I'd probably be at the gym like twice a day, every day. I'd be there like, yeah, my
you
consistency.
Get sick of me, I promise.
No, I think I'd love it, actually, to be fair. It's kind of like the ultimate internal dialogue. Like, that's what I'd like my internal dialogue to be like all the time. What do you think about the rise of influencer boxing? Because obviously, you know, boxing for a while, there's the kind of purists of the sport. This is how it should be. There's all the history. There's all of these things. And then we've seen this huge rise of influencer boxing with massive fights happening and, you know, kind of crazy pair-ups happening as well. Do you think it's killing the sport of boxing, as we hear people say? What do you feel?
I've had a bit of a journey with my opinion on this. I was in the purist camp and I thought, you know, death to influencer boxing. This is terrible. But the more that I see it and the more that I see how they market themselves, and my business mind kicks in, and I just think it's separate from boxing. I think they're in a league of their own. They're doing their own thing. I wouldn't class it as boxing in the traditional sense. But the hustle, the work ethic of them from a business perspective and the money that they're making, I take my hats off to them for what they're achieving within their own lane.
Yeah. And what I think it's really interesting as well, because surely it brings new people to the sport. So people who might not have, you know, ever really been interested in boxing, then their favourite YouTuber is doing this big boxing fight against, you know, maybe an older boxer who's been around for years, and they might do a bit of investigation and then realise that they actually enjoy it. And then kind of that's more money going back into the sport.
Yeah, I think it's putting the sense of boxing on the map. But I do think they're kind of leagues of their own. And if you observe them as that, I think there's a lot of angry people in the boxing world that haven't managed to sort of separate it and say, okay, we've got this sort of traditional, pure, gritty, spit and sawdust boxing over here. But then we've got this whole new generation of boxing happening over here. And if you can just differentiate, I think it's really easy to come to terms with the fact that they can do well in their lane, and then boxing and the people that want to go and be champions, and they can be in their lane.
How do you see the world of women's boxing developing? Because I've had conversations, really luckily, with like Clarissa Shields before. And she kind of got to a point in her career where we know she's crossed over now to UFC because she didn't have anyone left to fight.
Yeah. I mean, women's boxing has gone on a huge upwards trajectory. When I first started boxing in 2011, so just before women's boxing was allowed in the Olympics, there were six women in the database of the whole of the UK for me to fight. And it was still a circus act. It was unheard of my first fight was in an old working men's club, and everyone's jaw was just on the floor that women were in the ring. So from that to where we are now, where we've got women headlining shows, doing all female shows, it has definitely come on leaps and bounds. Still a lot more obstacles to climb. But from my perspective, I think the biggest gap is any women in the business side of boxing. Right. I don't think there's any women on boards and really having a say in how we take women's boxing really to that next level. Mm.
Well, it sounds like you would be a great person to do that. I love the idea of you kind of being in this like working man's club to box and all of the guys there being like, what's going on? And to think that was only 2011 as well, that people...
I know.
And
it's crazy.
Like you say about women's boxing not even being in the Olympics. Like it's just, you know, it's crazy. We think that in our heads, I think sometimes we don't realise how recently some of those changes have happened. And I think, you know, as women, sometimes we take for granted a little bit now the opportunities that are there because of, you know, what's come before us. So, I like that story, though. That story's fun. Now, you won The Apprentice in 2022. What made you want to apply for the show?
Actually, earlier, one of my three words to describe myself, a dreamer, is one of them. Like,
right.
The Lord Sugar would say at the end of every episode, you know, if you think you've got what it takes. And I thought, you know what? I do think I've got what it takes. So I thought, why not put myself forward? You can't win without putting your hat in the ring. So I put in an application, was successful through the stages, got on a show, had no comprehension that it would all go as far as it has.
Yeah.
It all just escalated so quickly. But I'm so grateful for the show and everything it brought.
Yeah, I like that. It's like the idea of you sitting on the sofa and, you know, like you said, Lord Sugar's at the end there saying, do you think, and you're like, yes, I've got what it takes at home in your living room. And then you're like, right, I'm going to have to action it.
Yeah. Do you know, I've always gone through life thinking nothing really is off limits. Like everything is possible. And I think a lot of people let that sort of seed of doubt set in.
Mm.
They go, yeah, but I wouldn't really win it. Or I wouldn't really get that far. You just got to get in there. You've got to dive. I love the saying, jump and see how far you fly rather than how far you fall.
Yeah. Or the other one, the one that I like is leap and the net will appear. You know,
yeah.
Like sometimes you just got to go for it and then you'll be caught. Speaking of Lord Sugar, how has that investment helped the business? And are you still working with him?
Yes, still working with him. We had a catch up a couple of weeks ago. He's been down to the gym a few times. And his investment allowed us to expand into a second floor. So last year, when it was just me, we were just a boxing gym. We had one big hall where we worked from. And now we've expanded to a second floor. We've got a sauna, weights gym, studio, cafe. So we've got the whole shebang now.
Now you mentioned obviously Lord Sugar's been down to the gym. Has Lord Sugar put on some boxing gloves and had a go on the bags or the pads?
We're still not there yet. Oh. I am working on it. He did sit in this chair though.
Right.
He came in my office, he sat in my chair.
Straight away. He's like, that's my chair, that is.
He did. But no, he was very, very happy with how things were going. He used the word impressive, which I think I'm going to get tattooed on me because I never expected to get that out of him. No, we've got a really good working relationship, very supportive. He's very sort of emotionally invested in seeing his apprentice winners do well. And he's there for the whole journey, the ups and the downs.
It's so nice to hear, but I kind of want, you know, on the next season for him to come out in a boxing robe with, you know, with gloves when he walks to the table and have like some music playing. It would be great.
Like,
maybe
like
you could suggest it.
Nothing is off limits for me. You never know.
He could be the next influencer boxing match, you know.
You never know.
Who do you think would be a good opponent for Lord Sugar?
I think the Piers Morgan thing could easily be settled. Maybe Donald Trump, although Donald Trump's been in enough wars right now.
Yeah, maybe he's out for a bit.
I think Lord Sugar, in his day, would have made a really good boxer. I think he's got that, as they say, he's got that dog in him.
Yeah. But also, you have to have a little bit of, you know, personality, a little bit of pizzazz, don't you? Well, some boxers do, some not so much. But I think he would have, you know, been a little bit showboaty. People would have enjoyed that.
Yeah. You got to step in the ring and have the confidence that you're going to win. And he, without a doubt, has that.
Would you recommend, Marnie, the Apprentice to anyone who's thinking of applying for it? Would you be like, go for it?
Yes, I would. I think it has been an incredible experience. However, I would advise people to go into it. If they're hoping to win and they want to take it all the way, go into it with their eyes wide open, because there is so much more that comes with the show than just the show itself. Filming the show, taking part in it was my favourite bit. Loved every minute of the tasks. But you don't account for being thrown into the public eye so quickly. The absolute overwhelming, all-consuming pressure that goes with running a business in the public eye. My first year of business was done with press and journalists and everything, watching everything I do. So if you're going to win, definitely do it with a plan of action and thick skin.
And I think that's...
It has been hard. It's been really difficult.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Because like you say, when you're filming the show and stuff, you don't have the element also, I guess, like social media, that, you know, people have got... everyone's got an opinion. And, you know, that's it for somebody who's purposefully kind of put themselves out there and has, you know, maybe built a platform and slowly been introduced to, you know, the fact that you're going to get negative comments and built, you know, kind of a thicker layer and a resilience towards that. For you to then just be like... thrown straight in at the deep end and suddenly all of this bombardment of everything, that must be, you know, mentally a lot to deal with.
Honestly, it has been incredibly hard, and it's something I'd like to talk more about because I don't think people acknowledge it. And even people just acknowledging the damage they can do through social media, there's a lot more to be said around it. I know there's a lot of people already advocating for it, but it really, really is a jungle out there. Once you get catapulted into it, it's not easy. And as you said, the dramatic sort of overnight change, it was a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine it was a lot. But look, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And if you'll have me, I'd love to come down and, you know, put my gloves on and show you my jab cross hook. I mean, I'm not very good at hooks or uppercuts.
I would love that. Bring the whole gang so we can get as many people in boxing as we can.
I absolutely love it. Thank you, Marnie. Thank you so much for talking to us on the show. It has been an absolute pleasure. That was Marnie Swindle, of course, the founder of Bronx London, the incredible boxing gym and winner of The Apprentice 2022. Coming up after this, I'm going to be joined by Jess Evans. She is the founder of Bored of Dating Apps.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What The Health.
FUBAR Radio presents
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Joining me in the studio was AJ and Curtis Pritchard.
When I used to go on Strictly, I used to think of it as like a public service. I'm entertaining somebody... for 90
and we
seconds.
Salute you.
And
thank
just like,
you, AJ.
I want people to forget about their problems. I know it's a really weird mentality.
No, it's a. You are right in a way, right? Because there
well,
are people
that
never
made the final.
There was no need for that. Well,
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
I'm joined by fellow Love Island contestant Adam Maxted and professional wrestler, may I add. If you could wrestle any celebrity, who would it be?
I'm trying to think who would be...
Someone needs to like, be like your height, your size. Come on, you've got to be fair about it. It can't be like a little weasel.
Maybe like Anthony Joshua or something.
Jesus. Really? You reckon you could take Anthony Joshua?
In a boxing fight, probably not.
But in a wrestling match. Yeah.
In a wrestling match, I back myself.
Okay, fair.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
TikTok sensations Jack and Sorrel. Iconically, there have been some amazing celeb couples. Who would be your favourite of all times,
David Beckham and Victoria? And
goals.
I just think, like, the twists and turns of it all, but still being together like that, that to me is peak celeb.
For me, do you know what? I just love a good power couple. We had Beyonce, Jay-Z. Like,
yes.
I want them to reign highly. I want them to be girl bossing, man bossing, just bossing throughout, and us obsessed with them separately and together.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
You are listening to FUBAR Radio, and this is Clara Hermit here for Gabby Allen on the What The Health show. And it's time for our moment of wellness. And at this point of the show, we are going to be joined by the incredible Jess Evans. She's the founder of Bored of Dating Apps. And you might be thinking, what does that even mean? Well, Jess joins us now and she's going to tell us all about it. Hello, Jess. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good. Thank Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And it's lovely to have you with us on the show. And, you know, for people listening, I've been calling it Board of Dating Apps, but can you tell us a little bit about what Board of Dating Apps is and why you started it?
Yeah, so I started it about 2.5 years ago now because I was really bored of dating apps. And it was such a thing for myself of where I was like, I don't think I can mentally carry on as I am at the moment. I'd gone through a really bad breakup and I'd gone back on the apps and I was like, oh gosh, that conveyor belt dating, which really encourages, you know, a lot of behaviours like the grass is greener and, you know, there's always something better around the corner. And it's just, it's kind of, none of us are good enough actually for the dating apps. That's kind of how it feels. Like I meet the most incredible women in particular, and they're struggling and I'm like, you're so gorgeous, you're so accomplished, you're so funny, you literally have everything going for you, and they're struggling. I think it's not a them problem, it's the apps. It's what it's kind of normalized, these weird behaviors that we've just got accustomed to. So it wasn't just the swipe culture that I hated, it was really the culture of dating that I was like, I would just love to put on organic offline dating socials of where, you know, there is a bit of accountability there. You know, we encourage people not to ghost and we encourage people, you know, to be respect, you know, just bare stuff, be respectful of each other. And yeah, so I started up because I wanted to meet someone basically. And I was like, you know, what better way to try and do this than do it in my own home city in Liverpool.
And just at this point of the show, I think we can say that you did meet somebody. So, you know, not only have you helped lots of other people meet their significant other, but you met your significant other through the kind of product that you've created, proving that this works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely changed my idea and my attitude towards dating, of where I think I became a bit bolder actually in dating. And I think I took things less personally. And I think I just had a very different approach to dating. Because I'm such a feeler, and I think after every date I'd go on, if it didn't work out, I'd be so heavy. But I think I kind of changed a lot of my attitudes towards it, which definitely helped me get in my relationship now. But it's been amazing because we've seen, to my knowledge, there's been 13 engagements and a Boda baby. And this is just stuff that I know of. So I'm not, I hope there's more. And maybe they're just a bit too shy to tell us. But it's good. People are meeting in real life. And it's not just romantic stuff, you know, because we obviously get love from so many places in our life. We get it from our friends. We get it from our family members. You know, the most rich love personally that I get from a few girls in my life, and obviously my partner too, but you know, those girls give a love that my boyfriend can't give, and it's just, you can't compete with it, it's just different. So yeah, we celebrate all forms of love. So there's been a lot of friendship as well, and I just think, you know, people kind of throw away that of like, oh well, it's just friendship, and I'm like, no, like friendship keeps you so mentally healthy, it keeps you stable, it keeps you enjoying life. I'm like, yeah, anyone can go and get a relationship, but to have amazing friendships around you, I'm like, that is such a win. So a lot of community has been happening, a lot of friendship.
Yeah, and I think just hearing you say that, it's so, as a single person who's been single for, you know, 5 years, my female friendships are, they're just everything to me. When people say, you know, you kind of, your friends are your chosen family, I really, really believe that. I have fun with them. I go on adventures with them. You know, they are my support system. They're just incredible, incredible people. And I feel like I'm so, so grateful for them. And this is a conversation that I've had a lot recently, is this kind of idea that, you know, it's not one's better than the other when it comes to romantic relationships or friendships. They're both equally important, and they play different roles in our lives, right? So you've created Board of Dating Apps, which is a series of events that are now happening all over the UK, but also going international now as well, which is amazing. And there are events where people who are single can come along and meet each other, right? And it's a really beautiful thing. Why do you think, Jess, that people have got sick of dating apps? Why do you think people are just like, I've had enough?
Yeah, I think we touched on it before a little bit. I think it's that feeling of, you're never good enough, you're never tall enough, you're never rich enough, you're never funny enough, you know, you're, it's this feeling constantly that, oh, you know, there's some, it's a fantasy for a start, there's something around the corner. If you meet someone and you have a connection with them, I think personally you've won, you know, that's what you're looking for. No one is perfect. No one is, you know, people often say, you know, I'm looking for a 10 out of 10. And I think, well, even, you know, even in friendships, people don't tick all your boxes. Yeah. You know, it's okay for people to be flawed. It's okay for people to not, you know, there's so many things, whether it's physical or whether it's emotionally, there's so many things where I'm like, oh gosh, I could do better. I could be better. But thankfully, my friends don't hold me and my boyfriend doesn't hold me to such a ridiculous standard of where he's like, oh, Jess, you know, you looked a bit rough yesterday. You know, I'm sorry. You know, this, I know that I'm being a bit pedantic. Yeah. But I just think there's this crazy gold standard with dating apps. But and also the apps want you to stay on them. They don't actually want you to fall in love. They want you to come back for more. They are designed that way. So they want you to fail a little bit. So I think with that from the dating apps, I think so many people have kind of saw through that now and are like, actually, they're not encouraging love. Mm-hmm. They're not encouraging accountability. They are just encouraging people to ghost. They are, I mean, I know certain things are out of their control, but I think it's this thing of where actually they're just allowing kind of rubbish behavior to go by and they kind of not do anything about it because they're like, great, people keep on coming back to you. So it's good.
We're keeping them there.
So yeah. I think people are meant, particularly mentally, I think people have got to the place and are getting to the place of where they're just like, actually, I'm going to really look after myself, even if it means going to an offline single social on my own,
yeah,
which is so scary and so daunting. We have so many people who come on their own because they're like, no, I'm putting my mental health first and my ego aside. And actually, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this for me and I'm going to have a great night. I'm going to make friends. I might not meet the love of my life, but I'm going to be in community. I'm going to be with people. It beats being on my couch, solo swiping, you know?
And I think it's, you know, when you are on your couch solo swiping, hands up, definitely done that before. It's not, you know, it's kind of giving you a really like false sense of the world and how things are. And I found, you know, personally for me with dating apps, it's the investment of time that is required to even get to a first date with someone. And then you might go on that first date and realize that actually in real life, when I've met you, there is no chemistry, there is no connection, there is no interest. And, you know, sometimes you can be having a conversation with someone and you're almost projecting what you want onto that conversation, but it's not real. So I think the idea of kind of like it used to be, sorry to sound old, but, you know, when I was younger and you kind of met people when you were out, at least in that instant, you know whether or not the attraction is there, whether or not the chemistry and connection is there. And then you have a choice whether to continue, you know, with that experience. And you mentioned mental health. And I know that on your website, it says that your events are designed to help protect people's mental health whilst dating. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you kind of try to make sure that that happens?
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you said before is so interesting about often we make up the person before we've met them.
Yeah.
And then we go into a date and we're like, oh, this person doesn't exist in my head. This is the reality.
Yeah, the expectation versus reality.
Oh, yeah, big time. And it's all that time. And we just don't, I think a lot of us just don't have time to be like texting and investing. And then we meet and we're like, you don't even exist. You're not even that.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. So, yeah, how do we proactively protect people's mental health? Well, obviously some stuff is out of our control, but we, when it comes to after the socials, but we say to our hosts who are there, who are amazing, and we say to them, say to every single person when they come in, you know, if you see anyone stood on their own at the event, get them involved in your table, get them involved in your conversation. Obviously, it's a bit different if you're having a romantic one-to-one, but we're talking like a group setting because we don't want it to feel this competitive environment. We already have enough of that on the apps. We want it to be this genuinely kind, respectful place of where it's not this, oh, well, you're not that good looking, so you're not allowed in this clique. We want everyone to talk to everyone. So firstly, we say to our hosts, if attendees see anyone or stood on their own, please get them involved in your conversation. Please get them involved in your table. So just on a very base level, there's that. But in terms of actually dating behaviours, we kindly ask all attendees not to ghost people after the social. So if they've felt something in that night and then maybe slept on it and they've realised, oh, actually, not maybe not for me, you know, don't ignore their text message, like or WhatsApp. We're trying to make it a healthier climate to be in. And we don't want to be an offline Tinder. We don't want to just be a place of where it's just all the same behaviours, but just offline. So we try really hard. So a lot of the messages come through our hosts of them telling the attendees, please, can you not, if you go on a first date with someone, don't ghost them after, you know, don't leave them hanging. It's not, no one likes that feeling, you know. But we also say, when it comes to actually people following our community, I think our messages are really clear. So they do tend to attract a certain type of person. I think they do tend to attract someone who is a bit more intentional, who is looking for something serious as opposed to just a one night stand. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with casual culture or a one night stand, but we're just about a little bit more serious. And I think we do attract that sort of person who's actually after that. They want a relationship as opposed to just a fling. So I do think we're really lucky with the people that we get who are kind of already in that mindset of like, well, actually, I don't want to mess people about. I want to get intentional with someone.
Yeah, and I think that that's really important as well, isn't it? It's just kind of like making people aware that these are the kind of parameters, these are the expectations that if you're attending, you know, one of our events, this is kind of how we'd like you to treat people. And just, I think, putting that out into the ether is a great way to kind of keep it at the forefront of people's awareness. And I hope, like you say, I think your messaging is really great. And I think that in terms of the people that you attract, it more so is people who know what they want and they just are looking for that right person. And that's a great space to be. For people who are, you know, listening to the show right now, if they want to find out more about Board of Dating Apps, where do they need to go?
Yeah, so you can either go to our website, which is boardofdatingapps.com, or you can go on our Instagram, which is also Board of Dating Apps. Or if you kind of want to skip all the admin, you can just go straight on our tickets, which is either on Eventbrite or Fatsoma, and you can grab a ticket.
Jess, thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you.
I love. Oh, sorry. I should have said love you too. I think I was a bit slow. I was taken back then. I love you. I love you. I love you too. But that was the incredible Jess Evans, the founder of Board of Dating Apps. Now it's time to answer some of your questions. Now, if you would like to get involved, obviously Gabby is back next week. You can DM us at What the Health Show on Instagram. But I have got some questions this week, and I'm just going to go through them. And, you know, just give a couple of pieces of advice that come to the forefront of my mind. So this one is from Tallulah, who says, I've just found out that my boyfriend has cheated on me. I'm heartbroken and have no motivation to do anything, including running, which I absolutely love. How do I get the motivation back? First of all, you know, I'm really sorry that that happened to you and that you've had to experience that, because when someone cheats on you and breaks your trust, it's just a horrible experience to go through. But on that point, I think we really have to be careful of the expectation that we have on ourselves. When you've gone through something like essentially someone breaking your heart, which cheating very often does, you have to allow yourself the time and space to process what's happened and also to heal. So you're not just going to suddenly be wanting to go out running and feeling great again. It's really a gradual process. So it's about giving yourself grace. And also, I think it can be really important to remind yourself and take a bit of time to remind yourself what you love about running. What does running do for you? What does it give to you? And really kind of tune into why you would want to go running in the first place. Even if that isn't the thing that motivates you to put your running shoes on and get out the door, just to start kind of, you know, getting back into that space where you're reminding yourself of what it is that you love about running. And if, you know, you've decided, no, this is what I want to do, I think it's really important to say that motivation comes and goes in waves. It's not always going to be consistent. And sometimes it is hard to find motivation. But self-discipline is something that we can all cultivate. And it's a skill that we can get better at. And so I think that if we're struggling with motivation, sometimes what we need to do is kick into self-discipline. And that might look like saying, right, I don't feel like doing a run, but I know it's going to be good for me. And I know once I've got a couple of them under the belt, I'm going to be fine again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say to my friend, can we go for a run this weekend? And I'm going to ask them to hold me to account, or I'm going to sign up for a, you know, a running club, or I'm going to, so that you actually have some kind of accountability that means that you are more likely to show up to do that thing. I think that can be really important. And sometimes we have to understand that on the topic of motivation versus consistency, that we just have to do things when we don't feel like doing them, because the way we feel afterwards is going to be amazing. So I hope, I really hope that that helps to kind of like shift it a little bit, because I think sometimes if we're waiting for motivation to come back, we might be waiting a really long time. The next question comes from Robbie, who says, I'm going on holiday and I want to keep fit. Do you have any advice for working out whilst being away? I'm laughing because all my friends hate going on holiday with me because I set my alarm, I get up and it will either be, you know, a hotel room workout, we're going to the gym. My best friend will tell you about the year of Ibiza abs, which was when we were in Ibiza on a, you know, on a kind of party holiday where you're not particularly getting that much sleep, and you're not taking your health and fitness that seriously. But I was. We had to do like 25 minutes of Ibiza abs. This was a long time ago. But my point is that I think working out on holiday is really great. But my tips are this. One, if you plan on working out on holiday, schedule it. Don't just go, oh, I'm going to work out on holiday. When are you going to do it? How many times are you planning to work out? Because I think that if you go without having things set into place and scheduled, you're just kind of going to go, oh, not today, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, I'll do it, no, I'll do it tomorrow. I can do it later. I can, and you just get distracted. Whereas I think if you set up and say, I'm going to do 3 workouts when I'm away for the week, I'm going to do one on Monday, one on Wednesday, one on Friday, and I'm going to get up and do them early, then you're already planning for success and succeeding. I take, when I go away, some resistance bands with me, because then I can just do a little workout wherever I am. Hotel gyms, not always the best, gonna be honest. Sometimes they're absolutely hilarious. You know, they tend to have a treadmill, a cross trainer, but then in terms of other kit, it's normally quite limited. So I find taking resistance bands with me just means that I have no excuses. And if I fancy working out outside, then I can do that. So I think that can be something really great. And they're light, you can easily put them in your case. They don't take up too much space. I always think get up in the morning and get it out the way so that you can enjoy the rest of the day. You know, if you wanted to have a cocktail by the pool, you don't really want to be going to the gym and jumping on the treadmill when you're a couple of pina coladas down. It's probably not the greatest combination. And also if you've been out in the sun all day, you can feel quite tired. So I think getting up in the morning is a really great time to do it. And I think that's all of my tips on that one would be plan and schedule, get out in the morning, take some kit with you if you feel like you need it, and do a little bit of research about the place you're staying to see whether or not it has a gym or a fitness room so that you know what you can utilize and use there. If not, there are so many workouts online and you can just put one of those on your phone wherever you are and do those. But I think the scheduling is really, really important. And just quickly, the final question, Kirsten asks, I've started going to the gym and I'm following a lot of gym influencers on social media. However, I feel like I'm constantly comparing myself to them, which is getting me down. Any advice? My advice on this one is just unfollow them. If it's not inspiring you and it's not making you feel good, then it has to go. There's the saying that comparison is the thief of joy. And I know we all do it. It's a very human thing to do. But you have to put yourself first and take action that best supports yourself. And I also think that if you are feeling like that and constantly comparing yourself to other people, that it's a really good time to work on things that support and build your self-confidence. Because, you know, you need to learn how amazing you are instead of comparing yourself to other people and thinking, I'm not that, I'm not that, I'm not that. You need to remind yourself of all the things that you are, which I am sure there are plenty of things, Kirsten, that you are amazing at. So thank you for all of your questions. Don't forget, if you have a question for next week's show when Gabby will be back, you can DM on Instagram at WhatTheHealthShow. That's how you get in touch. But thanks to Tallulah, to Robbie and Kirsten for your questions. I have had such a lovely time today. It's been really great to be here. I hope that I've done, you know, Gabby proud and taking care of the show while she's not here, while she's on holiday. I'm sure she's doing workouts on holiday as well, Robbie. Maybe go and check out on Instagram, and I'm sure she's got some workouts for you there. It's been a wonderful show. Now, if you've missed any of it, you can, of course, you can go back and listen. It's there for you. We kicked off the show talking all things sun care with Dr. Zainab Lefter, who is a consultant dermatologist at HCA at the Shard. And she was absolutely incredible and really reminding me that I probably don't do enough to take care of my own skin. So I'm going to be looking into that over the next few days and perhaps designing my own product, taking it to market, going on The Apprentice. No, I'm joking. We also had Marnie Swindle join us, who, of course, was the winner of The Apprentice in 2022. And she is the founder and owner of Bronx Boxing Gym in Camberwell. We were talking to her all about her journey and how she's managed to create the success that she has. And she's done a fantastic job. And finally, we were joined by Jess Evans, the founder of Board of Dating Apps, to talk all about dating, how it's changing and how we can date in a healthy way. It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you. Gabby will be back with you next week on the What the Health show. But from me, it's goodbye.